Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mother's Bathroom Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcast and join me for the story behind the song.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey
and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Big thanks to everyone who checks in every single week, listens to the new interviews at the various places. We put out new ones every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So whether you're listening at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcast from, always appreciate it. And if you're not, do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all of your favorite artists, discover new ones, and know what's happening in the music world. Again, wherever you get your podcast from, just type in Kyle Meredith with and hit subscribe. We'll take care of the rest. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I'm going to be talking with Allison Mosshart, she of The Kills, she of The Dead Weather, and she of now solo fame. In fact, it's her first official solo single, not her first solo track, mind you, but with a new song called Rise, it does sort of launch a new phase in her career. The song itself, while written a few years ago, as she'll tell you, it's part of Facebook Watch's series called Sacred Lies, and she's going to break down the history of the song Rise and how it applies to the TV show and all the different incarnations that it's been used on within the series. She'll also give us the details on the B-side called It Ain't Water. This is a song that's much more recent for her, and both of them include self-shot videos. That's a new obsession for her in her career, something that she's taken on more than a hobby, I would say, during this quarantining. And further along with the lines of these songs right here, as I mentioned, it's her first single in the solo career, but not her first song. And a lot of these songs, these solo songs that she's released through the years, have been part of films. In fact, it was only earlier this year that she was part of the Turning soundtrack. She had a track on there as well. So we're going to talk about what pulls her to work with film and TV and what she gets out of it and how that affects how she actually writes a song. And then beyond that, I mean, the girl is busy. For it being sort of a time where everyone's locked away, she's found a way to launch like a dozen different projects all at once here. Last year, she released a book called Karma. But Karma, it's about her obsession with cars. That's going to get a re-release this summer. And then there's going to be a companion piece to it, a spoken word version that, as she says, quote, weird shit inspired by the book. So we're going to get into that as well, especially the voices that she likes to make and use. And if you're a fan of The Kills, you might remember some of these voices from the early days of their releases she used in between tracks. And speaking of The Kills, yes, they are working on a new record. She's going to give us the update there. It says Jamie has about four songs in the works, so we're going to hear how that's coming along. So let's jump into it. It's Kyle Meredith with Allison Mosshart.
Hi, Kyle.
So you got this song called Rise, and it's a powerful song. It's really awesome. First off, just to hear you anytime, we're all big fans. I love hearing what you do, but this one I know is kind of a little something different and something special. It's for a show on Facebook called Sacred Lies, but it's not written for that, right?
Right. Yeah, the Rise I wrote in 2013. I wrote it a long time ago. And when I was asked to write something for Sacred Lies, I read the scripts and was, told kind of the vibe or what they were looking for, the kind of feeling they wanted, you know? And I remembered this song. I remember I had it in my big list of songs, and I went back and listened to my demo version of it and sent it to them, and they loved it. And so that kind of prompted their character. I never needed to record it for them. Their characters ended up doing their own versions of it, you know? And then a couple months ago, they asked if I would mind recording it so they could play it in the final episode, you know, at the end of the show. And that was great, because then I got a chance to go into the studio and do my version of it the way that I saw the song. So that was really, really fun. Here we have it. This song from 2013 suddenly recorded in 2020.
You know, one of the things I've read you say about it anyway was that, you know, you had to kind of give it to them in a way that it could meld into different genres if it needed to, which is a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
when you think of a song, you know, that you know, just about any song, I suppose, and we've heard, you know, bluegrass versions of heavy metal songs at this point in rock and roll life, but when you're coming from it as the artist's point of view, what exactly does that mean, in the writing side of it?
Well, you know, I think some songs work or are better lent to that. You know, stylistically, it was pretty much just like a simple blues song from which you can take in every direction that you would like, you know, something with a strong melody, and then you can sing it any style or any key with any instrumentation. So it needed to be like less of some crazy electronic drum beat kind of, you know, art show piece and more of just a blues song. So that's where it started. And then it's like a song you can sing without any instruments. So it needed to kind of sound like a classic song, almost like a lullaby or something. Mm-hmm. And their versions of it do. It's really interesting. I heard a bunch of them and it's so bizarre to hear your own song being sung in lots of different ways like that by different people. It's cool.
Is it fair to call it an empowerment song?
I think it is. I mean, I think it's a really empowering song. It feels good right now for this to come out. Obviously when I did it at the time, I never knew what was coming, but I wrote the song for myself all those years ago because, I was really missing someone. Things were really bad. I was trying to believe that there was light at the end of the tunnel, but it's applicable to anything. And I think that's the beautiful thing about music and songs is even with my own songs, the amount of years I've toured them and on different days you play them, they mean something else to you. They mean whatever you need them to mean in that moment. They work. And the same with everyone else's songs. When I hear them, I think they're about one thing. They're probably about something else. You know, once they're unleashed on the world, they are what and whoever you need them to be.
Well, I got to say, your style and the style you've given this, I thought it was at least a little bit funny because even when you're showing support in this song, it sounds menacing. Like, that's menacing support that's coming through there.
Yeah, I just can't help that.
It's a cool song. And I know this isn't, you know, there is a flip to this too with the B-side with It Ain't Water that's about to come out as well. What can you tell me about that track right there? Does it, because it's written much more recent than Rise, right?
Yeah, I wrote that in 2019. So that's a new song. And I really liked it. That was a song I writing room in LA and just kind of wrote it in one fell swoop, you know, from beginning to end. It just kind of fell out of my mouth and out of my hands. And it was always a song that I just sang to myself. I always just sang that song to myself. If I was stuck on another song, if I, you know, felt like I couldn't finish something, I was like, no, you can finish things. You finish this. It's a whole complete thing. And it was my little reminder to myself for a long time that would get me out of a situation of not knowing where to go with something. And I always loved it. And I played it for Lawrence at Domino, and he loved it too. So again, it was really exciting to get to go into a studio and realize that song. Take it out of that realm of just me and an acoustic guitar in a dining room. It was really exciting. And working with Alan Johannes was a dream. I love his work so much. What a dude. So he's recorded with everybody, produced everybody. Mark Lanegan, Greens, PJ Harvey, you know, all my favorites. It's so interesting. He walked into the studio and he had this backpack and he was like, I brought some percussion stuff. And he opened it up and I swear to God, it looked like some shit he collected in the forest. It was like weird sticks and bizarre instruments I'd never seen before. Leaves, actual leaves on a stick. And I was like, what in the world? You know, I don't know what any of it was. It was all like shaman stuff. And then he goes in and like lays down just the most simple, you know, rhythm track using leaves. And they're flying everywhere, but they sound like it's so cinematic. Suddenly your brain is like seeing, you know, 500 people march through the woods. You know, that's what it sounds like. And it was awesome. I can make fun of all of those crazy objects all day long, but damn, they sound better than anything else. He was like, he blew my mind with all of his crazy stuff. Blew my mind.
You use that cinematic phrase there, which, you know, ties back around because while Rise is being billed as your first single, it's nowhere near your first solo song. In fact, earlier this year, you'd released I Don't Know. And speaking of cinematic, I mean, that was also for a film with The Turning. And that seems to be something that you've kind of fit in. That's been kind of a groove for you in the past, right? With teaming up with films for these moments.
Yeah, I love doing stuff for film and TV because I think of songs very visually, always, more than anything. And I suppose that's from being from a visual artist background, you know. Songs are colors and shapes and dark and light to me. And they have like whole scenes play out. And I think it's kind of how I write. So I love that challenge of somebody needing a certain thing, if I see a scene or if I know what's happening in that moment, like what that character might be thinking or what it might feel like or what the walls like need to be painted in, you know, I really like working on stuff like that a lot. And I've been lucky throughout my career to be asked to do a lot of that stuff. So no, this is definitely not my first thing I've done on my own. It's just the first thing that's properly been released on Domino. It's cool. I mean, I'm really glad to release it, that it's a song that someone can buy, and I got to do artwork for it and make videos. I mean, every kind of creative process and the entire building around a track, I love doing it all. I love it. I love every part of it. So it's been really fun doing these two songs.
And I'll point that out because you made the video for Rise, which was a really cool, and I've read about you kind of teaching yourself iMovie in just a few days to do that. I'm assuming you're also going to be doing that for It Ain't Water as well?
No, so I did it right after that. I was on a movie-making kick. yeah, I can't wait for everyone to see it. I really stepped up my game. And then after that, after I did the second video, I was like, you know what, guys? I've graduated. I'm getting myself Final Cut Pro because iMovie is a nightmare. It's a true nightmare. It was like every question I had, every single thing, I was like, okay, I'm going to watch the tutorial, which is just not something I do. But I have a new sense of patience in quarantine. And I would watch all these tutorials, and literally every one of my questions, the answer would always be, no, you can't do that. So I got Final Cut Pro, and the answer is always, yeah, you can do that.
You can do
it. I'm having a lot of fun.
And I'm guessing you have to be more creative on this video, or you had to be more creative on this It Ain't Water video, too, because at least with some of the footage from Rise was already in existence. But did you have anything going into It Ain't Water?
I didn't have anything going into it. That video is really conceptual. It's quite beautiful and quite cinematic and completely different vibe in every way. Whereas Rise has 1,000,000,000,000 edits, It Ain't Water is almost, you know, one, there might be like one or two edits in it. So it's a really, it's a performance. I can't wait for it to be out.
Well, I'll ask you about a couple of the funny thing about your career right now is while everyone is stuck inside and trying to keep themselves busy, it really seems like I've had like a pick of a dozen topics to ask you about. So it doesn't sound like, you know, you're having too much trouble, you know, finding things to do. But while this isn't exactly recent, your book that was released last year in short press, Karma book, is being re-released, right? That's coming out this summer?
It is. It's coming out in August on Third Man. They do book publishing, and I'm so excited for that book to come back out because I only did an original 500 copies. So it'll be really nice to make that available to people on a large scale. And then I also did, at the end of last year, I recorded a spoken word record for that. So that will come out at the same time, which is less like a spoken word record and more like just weird shit recorded that's been inspired by the book. So it's really very strange. But I was right off the bat quite bored of reading right away. Just reading into a microphone didn't dazzle me. So it became a whole different kind of sonic sculpture that I'm looking forward to coming out. We'll see.
Because you're doing voices on this, right? I keep hearing you talk about these voices that were... let's hear about those voices, really, because I want to know.
I'm a little concerned. I don't know. I used to do this all the time. I don't know if you know, like the early Kills records, there'd be these little snippets of like me kind of talking in characters and edited together and sort of coming up under music or being interludes and stuff. And I always used to do that when I was in high school and college. I would record all my phone conversations. I would record myself having fake conversations with myself in different voices. And this really was an extension of that. And I had such a good time doing it. I mean, it was the most fun thing to do, speaking in different voices and different accents and playing different characters and adding weird sound effects. And you know, half of it's like the tracks are like 30 seconds long, you know, so they're just these like weird little blasts of crazy. And then they move right along to the next thing. So, I don't know. Now I'm obsessed with making mini videos for these things. So that's what I'm really obsessed with doing right now. So there's a book, then there's a record, then there's hopefully a ton of little experimental art videos, you know. We'll see.
That's cool.
For some reason, that whole Karma thing in cars, it just never wears out for me. It's a project that just keeps on going. So I like that.
Do you ever, have you, you know, I know this is probably far in the future at this point, considering, you know, how the world is, but do you envision you ever putting together, like, I don't know if a solo show is the right word, but, you know, where all of your projects come, you know, at the same time, where you've got the movies and your, you know, solo performances going? Is that something you see happening?
I mean, that would be really cool. I think that I need to get together a lot more work video-wise. That's kind of, this is now like a new adventure. It was paused like somewhere in my mid-20s. And now I'm getting back into it like 15 years later. So I don't know. Now I feel, it's funny. I started doing videos where I was editing between three VCRs and three televisions, you know, with wires going everywhere and cameras plugged into everything and really doing like really making movies like you would make a fanzine. You're just like with some scissors and cutting stuff up. And that's kind of how I've approached this because that's the way I know, you know. Although I have all this technology now at my disposal, I still feel like my brain is editing in that way. So I think it's interesting. There's places to go with it. But yeah, it would be great. I mean, I don't feel like I'm at that point where I need a retrospective yet. I have so much to do. It's going to be a lot. But I'm just excited about making new work all the time, you know. I'd like to make another book soon, and I'm trying to figure out what that's going to be. I have a few ideas, and I'm in the middle of writing a Kills record. So I'm finding the days are too short in quarantine. There's so much stuff I want to do. And I'm really trying to make good use of this time by exploring things that I probably normally wouldn't have the time or focus to. It's really been cool so far, but yeah.
It's an opportunity, I think, that's been given to a lot of us, this moment to kind of figure this stuff out like that.
Yeah, and I also feel lucky that I don't, you know, I'm not homeschooling kids right now. I don't have a normal job that I can't get to. I'm not, you know, it's a different, I think, for an artist or a creative person that's used to holding up in a studio for 15, 20 hours at a time and never speaking to anyone. This is not that disorienting, but, you know, at a point it is. And there's definitely a different energy and there's definitely a different thing. This is always at the forefront of your mind what is going on. So it's a challenge to like push through that, you know.
I'll ask, since you mentioned it there too, because you have been saying you're working on the Kills record. Are you able to say, is it far enough along where you kind of get a sense of what that's going to sound like, what we can expect from it this time around?
No, I couldn't describe it to you. I know there's like four songs that we have kicking around right now. And then Jamie has a whole bunch of stuff, which I haven't heard because he's very secretive and private about that. And he wants things to get to a certain point before he plays them to me. So I know about the ones that we've worked on together and are really excited about. So we've got a really good start, you know, but he's doing so much exploration and so am I. So I really don't know how it will come out. I always hate to say before I've got all of the tracks and I'm listening to them all the time and then thinking about how are we going to record these? What instrumentation should we use and developing that idea? So right now, whatever I would say would 100% change out of all recognition.
No, I completely understand. I will say that that cover of List of Demands that you guys did, you know, back in, I think it was 2018, a couple of years ago, was so good. So, you know, if it's any kind of continuation from that, I'm obviously all in anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that song is just so great. You can't mess it up. It's just so, Saul Williams is a genius.
Absolutely.
He's so good.
Yeah.
That was really fun to do that. I would have a conversation with Saul. I'm like, Saul, where the hell do you breathe in this song? There's no room to breathe. It's just like full blast lyrics the whole time. And I had to slow the song down so I could actually do it. You know, I was like, it is absolutely impossible to get all these words out. I don't know how we did it. So that was a really fun thing to have to figure out. You know, like doing like breathing exercises to get through it.
I love what you do. And again, I'll bring it back around to this this new single, Rise. It's such a powerful song. I'm glad it finally saw the light of day. I hope there's more in there like that, you know, that you've got sitting around waiting to come out too, because I'm interested to hear where you take, especially these solo cuts, as well as, you know, what you got going on with Jamie.
Yeah, well, thank you. Me too. I'm excited about it all. I can't wait for the next one as well.
Awesome.
And then I'll get to make a video. And then.
Allison, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate this.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, too.
All right. Take care. My thanks to Allison Mosshartz. Again, this new solo cut, Sacred Lies, and the B-side, It Ain't Water. and plenty more on the way where that came from. Now, the last time I talked with Allison was back in 2016 when she and Jamie stopped by Louisville for a show during the Kills tour behind the record Ash and Ice. So I thought I would include that interview here. We talk about the album Ash and Ice, the disillusion of guitar music, also Broken Bones, part two of Kyle Meredith with Allison Mosshart of The Kills. With a new record
Hello.
Called
Ash
Hi.
And Ice. Ash yes. and Ice. I don't always ask about the album title, but that one's cryptic enough that got me curious.
Well, it's cryptic to us as well.
Yeah?
Yeah. It doesn't mean anything. Well, it does. It means, you know, like, really, I got this mixing desk and it made me write all these songs, and I had tons and tons of things that I'd got, and I had to name them all. Mm-hmm. So you kind of keep coming up with working titles. And I just ran out of ideas, really.
And that's two words.
And I put my cigarette out in my drink, and it was like Ash and Ice, that's good. And then it just kept sort of becoming something, didn't it? Just gradually became,
yeah.
started having more meaning.
I mean, it's a really good title. It probably needs a better story at this point. But you know,
I'm going to think of one.
Yeah,
okay,
we probably
right.
need to work on it.
Well, there we were. And our house burnt to the ground, and we were standing in this on these ashes
in the middle of winter.
Yeah,
obviously,
something
fire in
like
the middle
that.
Of winter.
So then we moved into an igloo.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a crazy good record. It really is, and it's
Thank you.
You know for a band who's because you know I know it's always been the concept for you guys to do something different every time, and that's
yeah.
gotta be exhausting. By the way, like that's. I hear every band say that. Not every band. I hear a lot of bands say that. You know, like, we never try to repeat ourselves. Like, that's kind of a line the bands use, but that's not always really what happens with most bands. Just feel like, well,
sometimes it can't happen. I mean, you work really hard for it to happen, and at the end, you're like, damn.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is it is the struggle,
and
making
I
another record.
I like those bands that don't change as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Nick Cave, he's found his thing.
Sure.
It's just, or like...
Yeah.
The Cramps, you know, it's just, I love bands like that.
Like, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, but it was just, I'm not confident enough in that. And I can't sort of concentrate on one thing.
Yeah.
Especially with guitar music now, electric guitar music.
Which you've talked a lot about, your disillusion with where the guitar is. At the moment.
I like a lot of guitar bands. I like the sound of guitar, but it just seems, I just think it's, you know, why is it that hip-hop is just going crazy right now,
yeah.
like groundbreaking, was the freakiest, weirdest stuff. I mean, it like stuff like Future
mm-hmm.
and like Kendrick Lamar is just like, come on, you know. And R&B, alternative R&B is going crazy places.
This has been a conversation that I've
and
been having.
Guitar
so
music,
lately, yeah.
it's like still sounds like either Nirvana or the Rolling Stones.
Sure, right. Well, there was because there were two things happening, that's the way I saw it anyway. Like, there was the 90s comeback.
Yeah.
And so everybody right now, you know, is...
Yeah, which I'm a fan of.
Doing that chunky...
But I just, which, you know, there's a difference between what I want to hear and what I want to play.
Well, what really kind of caught me off guard about, like, where you're talking about where hip-hop is and even pop music is... Usually the musical movement always came from the underground. You know, it was the Nirvana
yeah.
or wherever. It was always the underground something. And this time it really feels like it came from the top. Because, you know, you go back just a few years ago and once you start seeing Jay-Z and Beyonce start experimenting and it
yeah,
gives a license
true.
To everybody else, you know, it's like... And now pop music becomes the thing we're looking at it going,
yeah.
oh, cool, this is the new movement. This is...
Yeah. It's true.
It's true.
And this seems to be where maybe you guys are borrowing from, or at least being inspired by.
You mean by bigger things like pop
yeah, with
music.
This record, I guess. Like, I do hear
yeah.
that. I hear that going on
I do
on
too,
with this
yeah. I mean, it's sort of long been I've been fascinated with this, this, you know, styles of music and styles of production. And they kind of keep to their own camps quite often, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's rare to hear a sort of, I can't think of a guitar record. This is the kind of record I wanted to make. Mm-hmm. Like a guitar record that has like Lee Scratch Perry production.
Right.
I know Lee Scratch Perry worked with The Clash and all that, but it doesn't really, he didn't really do that much in the end. They didn't use all the, you know. But I sort of wanted that kind of dub production on a guitar record, or, you know, take a R&B production and put that on a sort of blues record, you know, and just...
So do you guys go into that record then thinking like, I mean, is it usually like that? Is it like their concept or whatever, even the sound, like we have to shoot for this? Because you guys write separately.
Yeah.
You know, so to meet in the middle with a sound, do you have that or does it just end up that way?
It kind of ends up that way through lots of pushing and pulling because we both do write songs and then I bring my songs and they're always polar opposite end of the spectrum of the type of things Jamie's writing. So The Kills is really the combination of like jamming those two things together and finding some sort of
jamming them together
without jamming.
I was thinking of a beautiful sort of gilded bridge, you know, rather than just a hammer and trying to hammer them together. This is a thought-out architectural structure that bridges me and you.
See, there's your poetry right there. That's the poetry. Well, so I bring that up. Lyrically, is there also the idea, like, you seem to be working double time because of the Dead Weather and this. I mean, maybe not at the same time, I don't know. But like, it didn't look like to be the time off for you on that.
Like, was it much? No.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. I mean, lyrically, is there time to go, do you have to live to find the inspiration, or do you have to just sit down and think of, the idea?
I write a lot, so, you know, those two things didn't clash. You know, when it's time to write Kill songs, I'm writing a lot of Kill songs, and I wrote a bunch before that Dead Weather thing, so we had a lot to work with and choose from. Yeah.
It was a little banked. And I have to ask, you know, we've been talking about, I know you're talking the story a lot about, but the finger, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like the story about you broke your finger.
Well, I used to have this thing called trigger finger, which means like, kind of. This doesn't move, you see. But in the mornings, my knuckles would lock up. My knuckles would lock up, and I'd have to go, well, they'd lock, and I'd pull them apart, because they would just stick. And so I started having cortisone injections in my knuckles, which I don't advise. It's the most painful thing ever.
I've had cortisone. It is very
in your
painful.
Knuckles?
No, not, I had my knee, but I get it.
It's the guy, you know, I used to bite on some leather, and he would just, like, I'd have someone holding me down, and it was just horrific. And then I slammed it in the car door.
Yeah.
And crushed the end of it. And in his wisdom, my hand surgeon was a bit gung-ho. And he was like, let's do cortisone. He injected me with cortisone and a mixture of all this. I mean, I've heard it was like a 1 in 10 million chance.
Yeah.
But I got this deep bone infection and lost my tendon.
Oh.
They removed
Aren't you special? Congratulations.
Yeah, well, then I got a tendon transplant, and I can do that now.
Yeah, right. But that's. I mean, did it... If you couldn't play guitar, would there still be a Kills? Because that's kind of what this is, it seems like, I guess.
Yeah, I might need to get a little bit better at my instrument.
No. As long as I'm sitting somewhere nearby, it's still... She's the Kills.
Yeah, really. So it was never even a problem that you thought, like, maybe you were...
It was I a did scary, think, scary problem. It was. There's no doubt about
you know,
it.
But it's sort of. The thing I discovered most was that I'm really, really positive. I never for a minute was kind of worried about it, really.
Yeah.
And then the only time really that I got thrown was when I saw everyone else's faces, you know, and I could tell that I was probably not being very realistic. And everyone looked really worried, you know, that I wouldn't be able to play guitar again. And it seemed like. There was a time when it seemed like maybe we were winding this thing down, and I was like, whoa, no.
Yeah.
And so I just sort of committed to buying a load of studio gear, because I just thought, I'm going to just be a one-handed producer. I'm going to chain her into the studio, play some. Yeah. But as it turns out, guitar's easy to play with this finger missing.
Nah. Well, once again, the 90s got away with it all the time. I mean, all you need's couple power chords and you can get away with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, you find your style around all your you know, little hindrances and disabilities. Like, you know, there's been a lot of great guitar players with no hands. No. Like, well, you know, Django Reinhardt, he had 1.5 fingers or something ridiculous.
You can be a drummer with no hands, you know. You can pull that off as well. So.
Yeah, but a drummer's not really a musician.
He said it.
I noticed that on our tour book. Did you see that? It said, like, Johnny, drummer, Scott, musician.
It's different.
Yeah.
There's a song I wanted to, I did want to bring up, though. Humphrey Buzz?
Yeah.
It's great. It's like a, I've got it written down here. It's like the center. I mean, it is the center of the record. You put it right in the middle, but it actually feels like the centerpiece. It's like palate cleanser that you.
Nice.
It's so perfectly slotted in there. Is this your song? I'm yeah. catching by the look in your eye and everything.
I'm going like.
I mean, kind of like.
It's you.
But it's also the different song on the record.
We almost started the record with it. We toyed with that idea, but then we weren't sure what people's sort of concentration span for whole albums is anymore, you know? Because it just felt like it would be such a nice start, and then suddenly the rest of the record's not like that afterwards. But
well, I guess that's what I caught from it, that it was an album move. It was, you know, it was the arc or whatever, which is nice and refreshing, and I would expect nothing less from you guys.
Is it the first... It's the first song on the B-side of the vinyl, isn't it? On side two.
I don't know.
I have a digital. There's no B-side. It's
I mean, it's funny because I, when we were sort of conceiving the art, you know, the artwork and the record and everything, Alison was constantly thinking in terms of vinyl, you know. Mm-hmm. When we were doing a track listing, she was like, "I think side two should start with this." It was like, "Whoa, I mean, side two?" I don't think of it like that anymore, but. And then it got thrown even more because it ended up being a double, so we've got four sides now, I mean, double vinyl.
It's really confusing.
I can't wait to see that. Can't wait to hold that in my hand. And I should bring up, not that it's worth bringing up on my part, but the 14-year-old in me, of course, when I first heard Doing It to Death, I chuckled.
Why?
It's like, it's because, you know, in middle school, that would have been the sexual thing right there. It's like, really? Oh, you did it to death.
Really?
We're finding out new things about this
all
the time.
I heard you guys talk about, you know, going for pleasure too much, you know, until it doesn't make I still thought that, you know.
I never heard that, but, I mean, it was just really...
Oh,
yeah.
I don't think I should be too proud that I'm the one who brought that into the first time.
Breaking news. Yeah.
Not one of my better music journalist moments right
now.
No,
I mean, that's really interesting. Someone else said, like, oh, I liked it because it was really tongue-in-cheek. And I just thought, it's not really. It's like, what? I didn't know what they meant.
Well, it's a hell of a great song.
Thank
and it's
you.
A perfect first single. And I do love Ash and Ice. And thank you so much, both of you guys.
Thank you.
Dropping by.
Welcome.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah,
and good luck on your year.
Thanks.
Thank
Kills,
you.
Ash and Ice.
Alison Mosshard with Jamie Hintz right there. Again, that interview back in 2016 from that Kills record called Ash and Ice. And again, thanks to Alison for the recent call, the new single, Rise. It's out now. It's got that B-side, It Ain't Water, as well. Thanks to you for checking out the series. Again, before you get out of here, if you're not a subscriber, I do hope you hit that so you can keep up with us, all the new interviews. There's a new one released every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so you can keep up with your favorite artists and discover new ones and know what's happening in the music world. Again, you can find us wherever you get podcasts from, including iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. After that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews, too. Again, that's WFPK.org. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me on just about any social media platform, all the major ones anyway, at Kyle Meredith. Please follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offering, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.